today. And it just, it disappeared.
Right.
My husband's cleared up, and for some reason so I'll do my best to talk to you then a little bit tonight, show you what's happened in our life and how good God has been to us. I use number 626 as a scripture. The Lord lift his countenance upon thee and give thee peace. And I searched my whole life for peace, and I'll just kind of tell you what led me to this. The actions of other people can affect you the rest of your life. My parents were divorced when I was 3 years old. And not all divorces are friendly. And believe me, violence was the norm between my dad and my mother. And there's also, in that particular frame of time, 70 years ago, I can't believe that, but it was, there was a stigma if your parents got a divorce on the children. Not only the parents, but the children were also suffered from a stigma that gave you, was just like, you can't play with those kids because this might rub off on our family. So that was a very large part of this effect of someone else on our life. And our whole life, there were three of us kids. When parents were divorced, my brother was six, I was three, and my little sister was 6 weeks old. She had to go live with a friend of my aunt, and she stayed there for 5 years because my father would not support us. He was quite capable, but he chose not to. And back then, the law didn't say, you're either going to take care of these kids or you're going to go to jail. Although that finally came. But so my mother was always struggling to take care of us. And so we all, my brother and I both, went to really whoever would take us. And sometimes it was an aunt or an uncle, an aunt and uncle, and sometimes it was friends of the family. Sometimes, one time it was a neighbor, which I didn't care for, but I got stuck there for a while. And I'm not talking just overnight. This was sometimes months at a time. My mother was looking for work. She tried to find work, and that was not easy for a woman even in that time. And we had a minimum of church training. My grandmother was a member of the EUB, used to be the EUB out on East Main Street. And if she was able to, she would sometimes take us to church. So we really didn't have any church training at all. It amazes me that sometimes, even though we didn't have that, we still knew the rules that society placed on us, that you still called someone ma'am or sir, or, you know, you didn't say bad words, you didn't do these things, because society did not accept that at that time. And so we learned some things just because of the society that we lived in school and what have you. I had an aunt and uncle, his grandma and grandpa, Alex's grandma and grandpa, who went to church here. And every now and then we got to go with them. It was down on 6th Street. I only remember coming here one time. It was down in the barn, and my father actually came with me, and he'd sit down on the front pew, and Brother Wilson was preaching, and this was my father. And Brother Wilson preached right to him. And he sat there, and he said, like, you're not telling me anything, mister. And that was exactly his attitude throughout his life, that nobody was going to tell him anything like that. Brother Decker, I'm sure you run into people like that today. And so it was a very I remember one time going down there on Sixth Street, and of all times for me to come, they had a church, they had a feet washing. And lo and behold, the only thing I had to wear, and how styles have changed, was a sleeveless shirt. I did have a skirt. But I can remember being, when I walked in that door, I was convicted wearing something when everybody else was fully dressed. Although I didn't have anything else, it still bothered me tremendously. And things just didn't get any better in our life after that. My mother remarried after 7 years. And my stepfather was schizophrenic. We did not know this over the course of years, almost not until the end of his life did we know this. All we knew was that every 6 weeks, our life changed. And I'm not talking just a little bit. There was, for the audience's sake, I'm not going to talk about all of the things that occurred, but there was abuse and there was violence. And we moved constantly. Because again, about every 6 weeks, he could not function. He'd start on a drinking spree, and then that's what you would have. And then we would have to move after every couple months because the rent could not be paid. So we moved continuously. And I was in one, between the years of 11 and 12, I was in 6 different schools in a year and a half. So this was not conducive to really learning. And I don't know how I did, but I did, but I don't know how I did. But we never told anybody about our home life, never. No one ever knew, no one in the family, no one knew what actually happened in the family. And I think that that was because of embarrassment. It was also because you didn't know what the ramifications would be if they found out. When I was 11 years old, my mother had 3 other children, and they were literally 1, 2, and 3. And she reconciled all of us kids at that point because my youngest sister was 5 or 6. She was starting to go to school. And so my mother brought me and my brother home. And then we had 1, 2, 3. And again, none of the other stuff in the family stopped just because of us babies. At 13, our whole family moved to California. And the state of California was a lot different than the state of Ohio at that time. And if my stepfather got on a drinking spree and he came home and my mother called the law, he would go to jail. They did not mess around with you then. Now out here, we lived out of Buckeye Lake. He knew every cop in town. And he just, you know, they were his good buddies. So he never had to go to jail while he was here. But out there he found out things were different. And our life went on for probably about a year and a half. And then he and another gentleman got drunk and they threw a rock in a jewelry store window and grabbed some jewels. Well, before they even went a half a block, they caught them. Now in California and in a lot of states, anything can be considered a weapon. A rock was a lethal weapon there. And this time they sent him to Soledad Prison, which I don't know, probably none of you know about this prison system, but that wasn't a very pleasant place to be in Northern California. It was a high security prison. And it was Mom would take us up there with the babies to see him. And we were told he was in the hospital. So as we were older, we found out it wasn't a hospital. Now, most of my teen years were caring for the four younger ones than me. My brother went into the service when he went to California. And during those teen years, it was like a yo-yo, up and down and up and down and up and down. My emotions were always on the verge, just the verge. There were many times I contemplated suicide. I could not stand anymore. I had the responsibility of those four kids, and I was only 13 years old. And yet, my mother worked second shift. And then when I would get home from school, I had the responsibility for the children. But it was the pressure of always knowing, you didn't tell the neighbors that your daddy was in prison. You know, my birth father was out of the picture by this time. And so, when I graduated from high school, and that was only by the dean of girls, my mother wanted me to quit high school in my senior year. The dean of girls, she said, I am not letting you quit. If whatever I have to do to keep you in school, I'm going to have you get your certificate. And that's what she did. But the day that I graduated from high school, and by this time, my stepfather was back home, I had my bags packed, and I took off for Los Angeles with cousin. And then I came back to Ohio because I wanted to be back here. I never liked California. And again, there were no roots. I lived loose, and I paid dearly for everything that I did. And I won't go into any of that stuff with you, but I've paid dearly, still paying. And after I was probably about 29 when I got married for the first time, and I was married for 13 years. And again, this is the difference between marrying a godly man and marrying a worldly man. You would think that with everything that I knew, that I wouldn't follow that pattern. But I did, and my husband was an alcoholic. And I think a lot of women feel this way. Oh, we can change. We can change him. We can change him. Well, you might as well forget it. You do not change a man. Just don't do it. But he passed away when he was 47. He was an alcoholic, but he had lung cancer and a heart condition. Now, I worked for him. That's how I met him. And I also, there were two other women that I worked with then, and that was Diane Nichols. I don't know if any of you know her, Diane Craig. And she went to church here, she played the organ. And Alice Weaver, she also attended here. And it's funny how the Lord will put people right in your path because he knows your heart is still tender, but you will not, that you don't know what he's setting up for you. Well, when I married my husband, I worked right across from Diane Nichols. I worked directly across from her. And I had told her, because I worked in human resources at that time, and I told her, I said, don't even think about coming in here and preaching that Church of God stuff, because we don't want to hear it. She never said a word. But she lived her life accordingly. And since she was right beside me, you know, I'm getting a lot of overflow. But they were both instrumental in me getting saved. And when I had been, during the course of those 20s, I had been through the Baptists. I had been through the Catholics. I had been through the Lutherans. I had been through the Mormons. So see, I was looking all that time, but then God put somebody right in my pathway to help me get on the right level. And then after my husband had passed away, I was single for 8 years. And then the Lord sent me Brother Joe Brewer. And he's very steady, and that's just what I needed, because I had that tendency to be up and down and up and down and up and down. And we have been married 23 good, godly years. Now, I want you to... There's a lot more I could have told you, but I don't feel it's necessary. But I would like you to think about something. Between the years of 10, I'm going, and 25 years old, you will make decisions that will affect you for the next 50 to 60 years. There's going to be things that you do now that are going to affect you that long. Make godly decisions. Learn from any mistakes you make, because paydays can be very expensive. The second thing is lead by example. Even at your young ages, you can be an example to others. It's very important, because the church and this country needs women of substance and men of integrity for the glory of God. Maintain your self-respect and the self-respect of others around you, because words do hurt. Keep the Lord first.